Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, everybody, this is Henry Melcher. I'm a producer here at Late Night. So this is a special bonus edition of the Late Night with Seth Meyers podcast. For this episode, I interview Michael Moore after his interview with Seth and on the way to his Broadway show, The Terms of My Surrender, at the Belasco Theater. It's a really fun conversation as we kind of walk the streets of New York and get backstage with him before his show. I think you'll really enjoy it. Thanks. Hey, everybody, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Michael Moore. It is after Late Night, and we are heading actually to the Belasco Theater with Michael because you have a show in about an hour from now.
Yeah, a little less than an hour.
Let me ask you, so you typically do movies. Do you have a pre-show ritual for theater? Like, what would you usually be doing at this time, an hour before the show?
I would be checking on what the latest news is that happened because, as you know, on your show,
things tend to change.
You've ripped up the monologue numerous times.
We have, yeah.
And so I have a 15-minute thing at the beginning of my show. Some of it's based on the news of the day. And so I'm checking the news. And I'm drinking a lot of water and tea.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll just sit quietly. Not rest my voice and not talk. Yeah.
Is it strange? So when you have a documentary, you're able to edit. Right now we're exiting through the lobby of 30 Rock. When you have a documentary, you have more time to edit. What's it like editing your show when you have a hard curtain?
It's wild. And I've had to edit on the fly, on the stage, with 1,000 people watching.
What does it look like to be editing your show during the show?
It's strange, but it's very exciting. Hey, how you doing? Hi. We're a pass. What is this?
There's a line.
A line of what?
I don't know. I don't know
where
they're
headed. Going.
Some show, but Michael has some fans in the Rockefeller Center lobby, it's for sure. So sorry, you were talking about editing the show while you're doing the show. That's super interesting to me.
Yes, and there's audience interaction, so
there are.
I have, this isn't scripted, this part of it, so I'm having to go with what happens and respond in an improv sort of way. And I'm not a trained actor, I'm not a comedian, I'm not an improv person, so that part of it, I love the challenge of it.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of fun with it.
What was it like when you stepped on stage the first time?
It was exhilarating.
It was, yeah.
It was like, and I felt, I gotta, honest to God, I felt so blessed because I get to make my Broadway debut at this age. It's like, geez, how incredibly cool is that?
Yeah.
And
just gonna jump into the car here, head down to the theater.
Yes, we're gonna. Yeah, can you push this seat up here? We can all get in there.
Yeah, we're gonna pile in here.
No, I'm doing a live podcast. Yeah. I like to ask. No, you're kind. Thank you.
I'll see you soon.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's the most polite TMZ guy.
That was used TMZ.
I've ever met. Can I give you this here?
Yeah, definitely.
We'll come in like this. And now we are in the Chrysler minivan.
Yeah, Detroit company.
Yes.
Do you
Well, actually, it's owned by Fiat, so it's in an Italian car, but it's, yes, it's headquarters are still
okay, that's
in Auburn Hills, Michigan.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, so this poll came out today that said 67% of Republicans defended the president's comments on Charlottesville. I'm wondering what conversations you have with Republicans about what's going on right now, because it seems to me it's not a debate between left and right, Democrat versus Republican. It's right and wrong. And what the president said was blatantly wrong. How do you have conversations with Republicans to get them to that point that what the president said is outside of kind of the normal realm of politics, of political fights?
Well, this is the position I've taken now. And this may sound a little harsh, but we only have so much energy in us these days.
Yeah.
We're in desperate times. And so I'm not able to really take a lot of my time trying to convince Republicans of anything at this point, mm-hmm. nor do I want to. Our side has won the popular vote in 6 of the last 7 presidential elections.
Yeah.
We are the majority of this country. The majority of Americans take the liberal position, as I said on the show,
yeah.
on nearly all the issues. So I don't have to do, I don't really need to convince Republicans. I would like it if they would change their minds and
sure.
change their votes, but if they don't, that's fine. The
numbers are there for progressives to,
yes,
to win.
Absolutely, yes, yes, but you have to be smart about it.
Yeah.
And you know, we got outsmarted
yeah.
By somebody who really isn't that smart, but smart enough to know what he had to do. I mean, he was running, think about this. He was running with, I would think historians would say, perhaps the smartest person ever to run for office,
mm-hmm.
Hillary
yeah.
Clinton.
Yeah.
So how we got outsmarted by perhaps the dumbest guy ever to run for president is such a humiliating thing for it. We can't handle it. And so we want to,
yeah.
you know, we want to blame the Russians. We want to blame Comey. And yes, mm-hmm. the Russians and Comey and all these people did have something to do with this.
Yeah, definitely.
But to not acknowledge our own participation in our downfall here is folly, and we won't fix this. We won't change it again if we continue to ignore, you know, our culpability in the mess that we're in.
Right. So, okay, about a year ago, maybe a little bit more, you said Donald Trump's going to win the presidency. Everyone freaked out, thought you were crazy, thought you were wrong. I personally thought you were way off base, and that was not true. Okay, so you were right. You've said before.
Yeah, I didn't win anything for that.
Yeah, you didn't want to be right about that, but you
no,
were right about that.
No, I wanted to be wrong.
Yeah.
And I also said he would win by winning Michigan, Wisconsin, yep. Ohio, and Pennsylvania.
It's amazing. You called the states.
Yes, yes. That should even be a bigger prize for that call.
Right. So now, okay, this will scare people, because people who do not like the president, because you are now saying Democrats need to be prepared for 8 years of Trump.
Well, it's possible.
Yeah.
To say that it's not possible is you're now trying to live in an alternate reality.
Yeah.
The reality is, if you thought, you who are listening to this, who thought there's no way this guy is going to get elected, mm-hmm. certainly not after what he said about grabbing about John McCain, about
yeah.
the Gold Star family, about the Mexican judge,
yeah.
you know, and, well, he did.
Yeah.
To say that he will not be your president in 2025, 8 years from now. And by the way, just do the math on that. You know how old you are now.
Uh-huh.
How old are you going to be in 8 years?
Uh-huh.
Imagine at that age, Donald Trump is still your president in January of 2025. I let's pause for a moment.
Yeah, let's let that sink in.
Let them get the throw up out of their mouth a little bit. And
that sound is a lot of people just donating to the DNC.
Well, hopefully. And hopefully if the DNC is listening, do your friggin' job.
Yeah.
Do your friggin' job. So, get some candidates that are going to win in these congressional districts. I mean, we are, I cannot believe the kind of losers we are when we have the majority of Americans with us, and yet we lose and lose and lose and lose, even though we're, I mean, do you realize in our 50 state capitals, the Democrats control only 6 of them. 6 of the 50 capital, you know, where they've got the governor and they got both houses. That is like, man. You know, we need some new leadership, and we need something, you know, I'm not in favor of a third party, because that's going to take us too long.
Sure.
We got an immediate problem, and there's already a party. The Democrats, they've already got a building. in D.C. They got a logo picked out.
Yeah.
They already got the stationery printed. You know, we didn't need to go. We don't need to stop. We just need to take over the Democrats and let the people run this party.
Yeah.
And make it a people's party and get this country back in our hands.
What kind of candidates do you want to see the party run at all levels?
Beloved.
House, Senate.
Beloved.
Beloved.
Beloved. Number one, beloved. Who's the Tom Hanks in your congressional district? Run him. Who's the Michelle Obama in your state Senate district? Run her.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is what we have to do. We have to start running people that people want to vote for.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with picking. I mean, I remember the first time I voted when I was 18. And the Democrat who was running was a local government teacher. Mm-hmm. But a beloved teacher. The teacher everybody loved. And damn if he didn't win.
Right.
Became our congressman. That's how we need to start thinking. And don't think your local Democrats are recruiting the right people right now. You need to sit down with your friends. Go to the bar. Have a drink or have coffee at home or whatever. And start thinking about, God, who in our town could win? Who's just beloved? And let's go and talk to them about running for office.
In your show, you talk about kind of your entry into politics when you were in school. You were a teenager. Talk about
Yes, I was a senior in high school when I ran for office. 18-year-olds had just been given the right to vote.
Uh-huh.
And I had a big run-in with the principal and the assistant principal, and I was very upset at the way I had been treated. And I went home one day, and I saw the newspaper that the school board president was retiring, and there's going to be an election. And I thought, geez, you know, the school board is the boss of the principal and the assistant principal. So I decided to run, and I ran on the platform of firing the principal and the assistant principal. That was it. That was my whole platform.
Yeah.
See, I knew, like Trump knew, keep it simple.
Keep it simple, yeah.
Lock them up. That was my platform. And the adults were so scared of me in town that I was going to do this.
So you were not beloved?
I was beloved by young people.
Sure. Sure.
But the old people, I was a hippie to the old people.
You were, yeah.
So they ran 7 adults against me, not thinking that they're going to split up the vote amongst the older adults 7 different ways. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. I got out the entire 18 to 25-year-old stoner vote. And on election day, I came in first place and won the election. And within the year, I convinced the rest of the school board to fire the principal and the assistant principal. And it was It was like every student's dream come true.
Well, yeah, of course. Did you at that point think maybe you wanted to have a career in elected office or?
No.
No. Why is that?
Because no sane person would want to do this. We should we should only vote for people who do not want to run for office.
That seems to be the biggest problem.
The right?
People who want to run for office, that should.
They're the wrong people. If that person actually wants to be a politician, you should not be voting for them.
Yeah.
That's why. So I say on the stage every night, that's why. Everybody in here, I know none of you want to run for office.
No.
You all need to run. At some point in your life, you have to run for something. Mm-hmm. If you're an American citizen, you should see it as part of your patriotic duty. Mm-hmm. You know, that you're going to, at some point, even if it's just precinct delegate.
Yeah.
Precinct delegate. You go to the county convention once a year. Yeah. Come on. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, in Michigan, where I vote, you need 3 people to vote for you on the ballot. And there's never anybody that runs.
Right?
Yeah, you never, because nobody ever runs. Nobody runs for precinct delegate. It's always blank on the ballot.
Sure.
Put your name in there, run, go to the county convention. They may send you to the state. They may send you to the national convention. Suddenly you're there making the decisions.
Yeah.
You know, it's people have got to, here's the biggest problem is that the majority of Americans believe, and they're taught this from the time that we're kids, that we really can't make a difference, mm-hmm. and on a big level at least. We can make a difference in our own lives, and in our friends and neighbors and our spouses or whatever, but our kids, but not in a big way. And we're taught early on that the big stuff has to be done by the big people.
Sure.
But the big stuff is never done by the big people. The big stuff is done. I mean, Rosa Parks was one woman, didn't want to give up her seat on the bus, and the whole civil rights movement was ignited. Jesus, he just picked up 12 guys that were fishing one day. You know, look what happened with that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it doesn't take a lot of people to do this. And
Yeah, we could just get out here and go. We're gonna walk.
Great.
Oh, okay, good. Where? What street are we on?
43rd.
Oh, 43rd. Okay, so we're gonna head out and we're gonna walk
to
the theater.
Yeah, we'll walk.
Okay,
walk
good.
Up there.
And here we go. Oh, thank you, yeah.
So if one person can change the course of history, you must be pretty optimistic now in terms of how many people there are active, how many people there are in the streets. Despite how awful things are politically, do you maintain optimism?
Yes, I am an optimist. I'm not a cynic.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that if people got involved, things would change. If people are sitting around, though, thinking that Michael Moore is going to do it,
yeah,
or, you know, Rachel's going to do it, or Elizabeth Warren's going to do it, you know, if you just leave it up to a few people to do the heavy lifting, it's not going to happen.
Right.
It's going to happen because, you know, people believe in themselves, and they believe that they can make... I think if tens of millions of people did just a little bit, that would be better than leaving it up to 100 people to do a whole lot.
Yeah. Let me ask you about just... So right now you and I are walking on Sixth Avenue in Manhattan. What is it like walking around the streets of New York as Michael Moore? I mean, people must come up to you all the time and want to talk politics. What type of conversations do you have with people?
Well, mostly, I mean, people, I would say most of the people that stop me these days are people who've been depressed since the election.
Yeah.
And so they want to talk through their grief. So I do. I stop and talk to people, and
uh-huh.
You know, when they're upset. And I love walking in Manhattan on a really warm day like this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people look so nice.
Right.
I never walk on this avenue.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're right outside. The theater's right over.
Yeah, I never come over here because my theater is down there, but here we go.
Yeah. Well, let me just ask you, we were talking when we were leaving 30 Rock about what you do before your show. What do you do after your show?
After the show, I go outside and there's usually a couple hundred people there standing there wanting an autograph or a picture, and I do that. And I throw some water in my face and I go home.
Uh-huh.
And sit down and think about the experience I just had for a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite profound for me personally.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, I've really noticed how good this is for my soul.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've never actually stood across the street from the theater.
Yeah, so talk about this. We're standing across from the theater. There's a huge
line
of people.
Line.
They don't know Michael Moore is across the street. They're standing under a photo of you. What's it like seeing this?
Weird.
Yeah.
It's, and, hi.
We come from France. We are very
Oh, thank you so much.
Congratulations. Well, all what you do, we love it.
Oh, thank you. Come see my show. Yeah, how are you doing there?
All right.
Thank you. Sorry I can't speak French.
Oh, nothing. We try to speak English.
Well, I did. I had 3 years of French.
Oh, yes?
In high school. And seriously, all I can remember is my first lesson. Can I try it out on you?
Yeah,
just
please.
To see? All right. Here we go. Where are you from in France?
Near Paris.
Okay, here we go. Papa. Mangeons dans un restaurant ce soir?
Oui, papa, dînons en ville.
Excellente idée, mais demandez à maman d'abord.
Maman, mangeons dans un restaurant? Oui, papa, dînons en ville. Ah non, ne parlez pas de restaurant. Pourquoi pas, maman? Voilà le dîner. Ah oui, c'est ça. Papa, Nicole, à table.
How was it?
Nothing to add. It was wonderful.
You understood everything?
Wonderful.
Oh, my God.
English listeners, what did you say?
It was a lesson of... The kids wanted to go out to a restaurant
that
night.
Yeah, they go to a restaurant.
And they asked the dad, and the dad says, ask the mom. Huh? That goes on in that country, too.
ask their mother.
And you understand what you say.
And the mother says, no, don't be talking about a restaurant. I got the dinner right on the table. And then they call Papa and Nicole to the table.
Thank you. But Gabriel.
Oh, thank you.
Sorry. All right.
Yeah, how'd I do? Okay? All right. Je ne parle pas de anglais.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
So you're about to go into the theater here, do your show.
So people are lined up.
Yeah.
Waiting to get in.
People are beginning to notice you are directly across the street.
Oh,
yeah,
they
some
are.
People are turning their heads.
Oh.
All right, have they stopped?
I'm
kind of turning away.
They've lost interest.
All right, good.
do you enter through there?
There's some kind of bad karma or something
to see you before the show.
Before the show, yeah. This is what they tell. There's all these Broadway traditions and superstitions that I've learned.
Did you have to learn a lot of
Broadway traditions? Because everybody here, they've worked here 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, this is my first time.
This documentary filmmaker showing up.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah.
So, anyways, we're coming in here to the theater right now.
Yeah, so what are we?
And we're back. We're backstage in the alley.
Wow.
And we can, do you want to see what this looks like back here?
Let's do it.
All right. We're at the Belasco Theater on 44th Street.
Yeah.
We've gone through the Iron Gate. And not the Iron Bank, the Iron Gate.
Uh-huh.
All right. And
It literally does say stage door.
It literally says
stage door.
Both in iron and modern type.
I did not know that.
And we'll come in here.
All right.
And
we're in like a narrow hallway. I see a lot of monitors. Looks like a control room.
Yeah, so this is the backstage. That's the stage manager. All right, well, I'm going to go and get dressed.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Michael, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you.
This was such a pleasure. We'll see you next time. Congratulations.
All right. Appreciate it.
And break a leg tonight.
Good luck with the show and everything. I love the show.
Thank you.
Everybody loves this show.
And this show is great, too. It was really fantastic. It was super fun to see, and I'm excited to see how it evolves.
Thank you.
With the news.
Thanks so much, Henry.
Really appreciate your time. Break a leg.
Okay, I will. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.